We reach a really significant point in the Gospel of Mark tonight. Just like when you start a new season of a TV series, you often get the recap. You know, what has happened so far? What's the story until this point in the Gospel? Mark begins by telling us what he believes about Jesus. This is the beginning of the good news about Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God. And then he tells the story of John the Baptist and Jesus going into the wilderness to be baptized by John. And after that, the Spirit drives Jesus out into the wilderness for 40 days where he was tempted by the Satan. And there he was ministered to by the angels and the wild beasts. All kinds of hyperlinks and different texts are being activated already in these first few lines. And then Jesus begins his ministry in Galilee. He preaches, he teaches, he heals and travels about. He calls disciples. He drives out unclean spirits. He heals many. He preaches and teaches some more. He heals a leper. He heals a paralytic. He calls more disciples. He answers questions and announces a new understanding of the law and the Torah. He heals and he teaches and he appoints the 12. He shares parables. He explains some of them. He stills and calms a storm. He heals a naked, bloody demoniac. He heals a bleeding woman and raises a young girl from the dead. He's rejected in his hometown, and he sends out the 12 to go and do the same. He feeds the 5,000 Jews. He walks on water. He heals some more. He answers questions by the Pharisees and the scribes. He heals the daughter of a foreign pagan woman, the Syrophoenician. And he cures a deaf man, the story that we heard last week. And then in the section we don't read, he feeds the 4,000 pagans this time. And people demand a sign, even though he's done all these extraordinary deeds. He then gets frustrated with his disciples because they're so slow, so thick, completely unlike any of us, of course. And then he heals a blind man. And at the end of this section, he will heal another blind man. So there's this shift, this change. Jesus moves from the Sea of Galilee, where he's based his ministry over the first 8.5 chapters, and he moves with his disciples north, away from the lake, away from the crowds, into, again, mostly pagan and now Roman territory, Caesarea Philippi. The name itself gives us that very strong hint. This is the beginning of something new, something radically different, because now he's on this final journey. It's very short, very brief in the Gospel of Mark. It's only 8, 9, and 10, these 2.5 chapters that we join him in this journey. But now he's asking this question. All across these pages, all across these 8 chapters, this question has been there implicitly and explicitly. Who is Jesus? Who is the one who is doing all of these things? Mark has told us what he believes. This is the Messiah, the Son of God. Now, these thick and slow disciples, how much have they understood? So the first question's easier. Who do the crowds, who do people say that I am? And you get the standard answers. John the Baptist, raised again from the dead. Elijah, one of the other prophets. But then he hones it in. And he's always wanting to hone it in on us as well. But you, who do you say I am? And the answer that Peter gives in this gospel is very brief. You are the Messiah. You are the Christ. And then Jesus begins to explain and unpack what that will mean. And he begins to tell them that the Messiah is not about a king claiming victory. It's not about a king raising an army. It's not about a king reclaiming the throne of David, the long-lost and great hero of the past. This new experience of a king, the Messiah, is going to be different from all of those dreams, all of those expectations. This will be about someone who doesn't claim victory, but about someone who suffers, someone who takes up his cross, someone who, for the sake of us and for the sake of the world, raises his arms on a cross to be crucified. Rather than being victorious over the Romans, this Messiah will be defeated, seemingly forever, to be put to death, in fact, by this whole horrible regime. It's not what any of them are expecting. And so Peter stands up for him and says, no, Lord, you know, presumably because of the love that Peter has for Jesus. No, you can't do this. This cannot be the way. There must be another way. There must be another solution to this problem. So surely, Lord, surely that is not the way that is going to be the case for you. Now, we've seen all of these answers. We've seen this longing. We've seen the way that Jesus is the answer to all of those prophecies about the Messiah. We heard it last week from Isaiah chapter 35. All of the ways that Jesus heals the blind and restores the deaf. All of these signs are pointing to this victory that Jesus has and Jesus will have. But it's not going to be as simple as that. It's going to be about suffering. It's going to be about death. And Peter can't understand that. Peter, even though he loves Jesus, he hasn't yet understood it. And we're told three more times here in 8:31, again in 9:31, and then in 10:35. He will predict his passion. He will predict the suffering. He will tell us about what and how this will all unfold. Sometimes, you know, we only see the good stuff. Sometimes we only see the victory. Sometimes we're so blinded by the reality of what happens around us that we can't see the need for our own suffering. We can't see the need for our own self-emptying. That's the way that Jesus offers to us. Here, take up your cross. Come and follow. I think that's one of the reasons that we're so struck during these days when we're not victorious, when we can't have this final solution about the COVID crisis. We have to go through this slow, steady process of doing the right thing, being compliant to this system that none of us wants to do, that none of us wants to obey. We get very frustrated with governments telling us what we can and we can't do. This is about this slow process of suffering, of doing the right thing ultimately, that is about love, that is about making the right choice, not just because it feels good in the moment, but because we know that ultimately it is the right solution. Jesus invites us into this journey of self-emptying, of getting rid of all of the things that are not of God, that are not of our true self. This process of taking up our cross is about admitting our need to be purified, admitting our need to let go of all of this junk, all of these things that get in the way, so that we can be free, so that we can offer ourselves ultimately in love to the God of all creation. How do we do that? In service, in looking out for one another, in obeying these laws in order that we might, as a society, come through this. We might, as a society, be able to join together soon in worship once again. Let's again give our allegiance, our thanks to God as we slowly ponder that question ourselves today. But you, who do you say I am? Even though Jesus may not be this the one that we kind of grew up imagining or thinking about, his character is so much more complicated. His character is so much richer and deeper than we perhaps ever understood as children. And now as grown-ups, now as adults, we're invited into this encounter, this experience of truly knowing Jesus. He's interested. He wants to know the answer. He wants us to make that declaration of faith, to take that upon our lips, to say who it is that we believe him to be, and to enter more deeply into that relationship with our God. Let's do that. Let's take the chance. Let's respond to the Lord in prayer. Allow him to call us more deeply into life today.